and welcome to The Bookmonger. I'm John J. Miller of National Review. Thanks for listening. This show is a production of National Review and we're recording from the studio WRFH, the campus radio station of Hillsdale College. Our guest is David E. Bernstein, author of Classified, The Untold Story of Racial Classification in America. David, welcome to The Bookmonger.
Thanks so much.
Americans are asked all the time to identify their race or ethnicity on opinion surveys, census forms, mortgage applications, and so on. What's wrong with that?
Well, what's wrong with it, first of all, is that it's divisive. Like, why do we in the post-civil rights era need to keep putting ourselves into these particular boxes instead of trying to create a general American identity? But that's the broad problem. The narrower problem that the book really focuses on is that the classifications themselves are quite arbitrary. Just for example, we put everyone, just came anywhere from Pakistan to the Philippines, in the Asian American classification, even though really these are people who have nothing in common culturally, looks-wise, anything else.
What's the craziest or most absurd classification you've seen in this world of racial and ethnic boxes?
The craziest one in practice, I think, is actually a fairly, you know, mundane one, which is that for some reason, people from Spain are considered minorities and no one else from Europe. They're put into the Hispanic classification, and therefore if your ancestors happen to have come from Spain, even if they never stopped off in Latin America, that somehow that makes them members of a minority group, but someone who looks much more different than the average white person who's from Iran or Morocco or Yemen or Armenia or Greece is put into the white classification.
There was an addition of a multiracial option, as I recall, on some of these forms.
Actually, right now you are permitted, when the government is involved, to check more than one race. But two things about that. First, there was a move in the 90s to actually have a separate multiracial classification that was quashed by civil rights interest groups who didn't want to lose constituents, essentially. If you're NAACP, you don't want people checking off multiracial because then there are fewer black people to lobby for, and also for discrimination lawsuits, you have a smaller group of people who are the baseline. But also, the other weird thing about it is that after they won the multiracial thing, but what they did lose was that you can check more than one box. But I think what most people wouldn't be aware of is, in general, if you check more than one box, the government actually has rules that basically say that for statistical purposes, we generally put you into only one box. Basically, if you check black or anything else, you are classified as black. If you check white or anything else, you're checked off as whatever the non-white category is.
That's like the old one-drop theory, the old racist one-drop theory, which was used as a tool of exclusion to keep racial minorities out of the American mainstream, right?
Yeah, so one of the really disturbing things, I think, about the classifications we use is that we have reconstituted racist racial classifications that we thought we had sort of gone beyond the 1960s. So yeah, so the black or African American classification is anyone who has origins in one of the quote unquote black racial groups of Africa. So anyone who has an African ancestor, a black African ancestor, can check that, like the one drop rule. Or the Asian classification is a very strange one, but not coincidentally, it classifies people as Asian exactly the same way as we did under the racist immigration and citizenship laws from the 1910s and 20s, where the western border of Pakistan is a dividing line. It's an arbitrary dividing line, but it's not arbitrary in the sense that historically that's exactly where the courts drew the line for who is Asian 100 years ago.
Your new book, Classified, in its subtitle, promises to tell, quote, the untold story of racial classification in America. David, what is the untold story?
The untold story is, I think, first of all, that there's a actual regulation from the 1970s called Statistical Directive Number 15, which sets out what the official U.S. racial and ethnic classifications are and what their definitions are. I think very few people, even very few law professors, are aware of this. So that's one aspect of the untold story. The other aspect is, I think, that the general view, and this was what I thought before I researched classified, is that people can check whatever they want and there's no policing of it. So even if there are official definitions, there's, you know, no one could stop you from putting down whatever you want. But it turns out that I discovered several dozen cases in which someone put down that they were Hispanic or Black or Asian, and someone questioned it for whatever reason, and there were benefits involved, affirmative action or whatever, and the government had to adjudicate, are you really a member of the group or not? And I think we, as Americans, think we've gone past sort of the race trials that people used to have in the 19th century. Are you really Black or white, or, you know, anti-miscegenation laws or not? But we still actually have these things, and they use the same kind of criteria. What do you look like? How do other people perceive you? What is your status in the community? So forth and so on.
If we didn't have these boxes, these classifications, wouldn't it be difficult or even impossible to enforce popular anti-discrimination laws or even measure the status of civil rights progress in the United States?
Yeah, so that's a real difficulty. I mean, I would love to get rid of these classifications entirely, but it would be difficult. Certainly, there's controversy over whether we should be using statistical discrimination as evidence of anything to begin with. But even with that said, even if you're someone who really doesn't believe in what they call disparate impact liability, there is the issue, for example, of voting rights. How do you track to make sure that Black or Hispanic or Asian or any group is not being discouraged or dissuaded from voting if you don't know who's voting? So until we have more of a consensus that many of these laws have gone past their expiration, they were probably stuck with the classifications. But I should say the 1970s, when the government created these rules, they were specifically and narrowly for the purpose of enforcing anti-discrimination rules and otherwise just having consistent data that the government could look at in federal agencies. And they really were not meant to be extended to all these other areas, mortgage applications and scientific studies and, you know, sociological studies and all sorts of other things. And they weren't meant to change people's self-identity. Like, now people call themselves Hispanic. It didn't really even exist 50 years ago. So one reason the story is untold is that when these classifications were created, they were pretty uncontroversial because they were supposed to have this narrow, limited function. And instead, as government programs tend to do, they've metastasized to such an extent that they've really affected American life.
Can we undo these classifications, or is there a reform that you would recommend?
So I think the first reform I'd recommend is that we have something in civil rights law, 14th Amendment law, called the compelling interest test. That the government can only classify people by race if the government has a compelling interest. So I think the first thing we need to do is say, before we even classify people to begin with, is there a really good reason why the government's classifying people in this context? For example, in the medical context, I think it's actually counterproductive to use crude racial categories that don't really overlap properly with genetic categories for any sort of medical or scientific purposes. That's giving a scientific basis for things that really do not have one. So that's the first thing. The second thing we need to do is to think about, if we do have to use the classifications, do the classifications make sense for the purpose that we're using them for? So, for example, if we're trying to overcome historic discrimination, Spanish people haven't faced any particular discrimination in the United States compared to any other European immigrant group. There's no reason to include them. If we're looking at diversity, it's really ridiculous to put everyone from all of Asia, from Pakistan to the Philippines, Chinese, Japanese, Indonesians, Vietnamese, all the same diversity category, when they obviously have different appearances, different cultures, different backgrounds, and so forth. For hate crime laws, we already do use other classifications. It would be really ridiculous to limit hate crime laws to these five racial categories, not include Jews and gays and other groups that are subject to hate. So, again, so basically two basic reforms: only classify when it's really necessary to do so, and if it is necessary to do so, there is a compelling interest, make sure the classifications actually match what you're trying to achieve, and don't just crudely use these classifications invented for a different purpose.
The author is David E. Bernstein. The book is Classified, The Untold Story of Racial Classification in America. David, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks to all of you for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please take a minute to leave a review. Your reviews help new listeners discover us, and that helps us keep this show going. We'll be back next week with a new episode of The Bookmonger.